This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your Saturday night emergency room visit of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
I don't like your little games. Don't like your tilted stage. The role you made me play of the fool. No, I don't like you. I don't like your perfect crime. How you laugh when you lie. You said the gun was mine. Isn't cool. No, I don't like you. But I got smarter, I got harder in the nick of time. Honey, I rose up from the dead, I do it all the time. I got a list of names and yours is in red underlined. I check it once, then I check it twice. Oh,
look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me. Ooh, look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do.
Look what you made all of us do. It's Tay-Tay time. Tuning in to part one of a two-part extravaganza. This is the Taylor pregame. So everybody tailgate. Everybody get your tall boys. And also your short boys and your medium height boys, because Taylor Swift is back. So we're convening the gang. A whole lot of gang things going on at the podcast
today. I think
today.
You should say it's a squad, John.
That's true. Well, in 2014.
Squad days are over.
That's true. That was 2014, Karen.
Sorry.
So squad. Okay, you can be a squad member. The rest of us will be gang. So number one Swiftie to my left, it's Karen Gans, pop music editor of the New York Times.
Hi, John. I just wanted to tell you that you're looking fit as a daydream.
That's true. That's actually, that's pure factual. It's facts, as A Boogie would say. I've got pop music reporter of the New York Times. I've got Joe Coscarelli.
Yep. 1988 in
that's
the flesh.
True. Joe, is your sweater... You're wearing a waffle knit sweater.
That's true.
Okay. So I just want to let the people know. Okay. John Perales, chief pop music critic in the New York Times.
I'm wearing a mysterious grin.
That's true. Always. Now, I wanted to say something because I was thinking about this last night in anticipation of this podcast. I have been unfair in my time at the New York Times. I have pretty much hoarded most of the Taylor Swift coverage. Right? Because I was thinking, I was like, I almost don't know what
Perales
JP
thinks
about Taylor Swift. which is shocking to me. So I almost want to start by giving you, I want to like not reclaim the time. I want to give you the time to just give us a précis on what you think of Taylor historically leading into this moment.
This is going to be a long précis.
It's a long.
But here's the TLDR précis. Here's the TLDR version.
Wait, you say you didn't read my reviews? Oh my God.
I think she's a great craftsman. I think, you know, she emerged full-blown from the forehead of Athena as a country songwriter.
True.
And it has always been a really skillful word slinger. She grew into her voice, which wasn't much when she started, and now is a perfect actress's tool. Mm-hmm. And I've liked her less and less as she's gotten more bionic.
All fair points. All fair points, and very neatly distilled, and
it's almost like he had those written for whenever he left.
And never had a place to run them.
Yeah.
Donna Brazile gave me the question earlier.
Yeah, right.
So that pretty much covers Taylor from 2007 to the present, I think. And the Taylor, to jump off your point about bionic and bionicism, the Taylor that we arrive at in 2017 is the most bionic Taylor we have ever seen. And I think Look What You Made Me Do, which is the song that we opened with and was the first single from Reputation, is a testament to that. This is a song that reminds me a lot of, like, footage of like industrial factories in the Midwest, like just like stamping things out of like steel plate. And it's like, it's, you know, it's, it sounds like that. It's also Taylor at her least gentle and least melodic.
Yes.
And this
spoken word chant chorus.
Yes. Spitting. You
wouldn't call it rapping?
Spitting?
I would not.
Are they bars? Does Taylor Swift have bars? No?
I think we're saying no.
Okay. This is a new Taylor. It's Kesha-fied a little bit.
Mm.
It's something that is maybe not carried through all four of the songs that have been released thus far, which we'll talk about later. But it was a very striking, like, when it came out.
Yes.
So let's talk about what is the point, not so much the point of making a song like this, but releasing it as your kind of, like, announcement. Why would you do this if you're Taylor Swift?
Well, I think you also should go back to, like, when it arrived, because in between records, the last thing that happened with Taylor right before the song was that she had won this court case.
Yes.
Joe, do you want to summarize that since you wrote about it?
I didn't write much about it, but I wrote about it a little bit.
Yeah. Sorry, Joe.
Taylor, a few years ago, said that she had been groped by a radio DJ in Colorado during a meet and greet photo session, that he had reached up her skirt and grabbed her behind as the photo was being shot. He then sued her for defamation, saying that her team had gotten him fired by leveling this accusation against him. She countersued, and the jury found that he had, in fact, assaulted her, and she had asked for $1 in remuneration to
symbolic gesture,
donated money to appropriate causes, and, you know, just made a real, I think, a real statement on the stand. She was very firm, and she told it like it was, and it sort of presaged this whole moment that we're having now of people fighting back against sexual harassment, sexual mm-hmm. abuse, and she really, I think, put the language that she used to describe it, I think, was exemplary, and she had a lot of people on her side for, you know, in the terms of the general public, which you hadn't seen so much in the whole Kanye Taylor
right.
Because I'm recalling, actually, we did talk about this on a podcast where we talked about Kesha and Taylor, yes, sort of like finding their feminist voices.
Yeah.
But like, so she had a remarkably strong feminist moment.
But
that's
all
what she was
seems
out
like
of
a million miles away.
It does.
Away.
It feels like 10 years ago right
and
now.
And it's also, and we'll revisit this later in the show, but it's worth pointing out that the moment that Taylor had speaking on the stand and what she said was probably the most, unless I'm wrong, the most prominent extra musical moment of Taylor's career, or certainly of the recent years of Taylor's career.
Do you count?
Are you counting Kanye and
yes.
the VMAs?
No, yes, I'm sorry. Yes, outside of like the scandals.
Yes.
certainly, like with tiptoeing into social causes or political causes, anything like that.
Without a doubt,
it is
yeah.
the most
yes.
prominent and foremost thing that Taylor has done.
Yeah,
and then comes the song, which is basically like, "I hate you, Kanye."
Yes,
and I'm going to say it over and over and over again until you really get the point.
Yes.
But you have to remember, the song came out as a, you know, lyric video, was it?
Yeah.
A week before the blockbuster "I'm satirizing every video ever made"
yes.
video clip. So for a week, it kind of looked
also
like...
That seems like 100 years ago.
Yeah.
It kinda, for a week, it kind of looked like Avenging Taylor, which was a nice look for her for a moment. And then you realized it was basically beef.
Right.
But it took a while. I mean, that first gesture, that first, you know, "I'm fighting back," I think a lot of listeners, women in particular, perhaps, felt that. And then when it turned into a celebrity cage match, it got more boring.
Well, I think the messaging on all of it was a little vague in terms of how this idea of reputation and the Kanye thing fit into her killing the old Taylor and making fun of, yeah, all the different iterations of her in the video. It was a little jumbled, and I feel like you're right. Like, maybe this song would have been received differently if it came out with the video the first time.
Maybe.
I don't know that the video gets us all the way there either in terms of making more sense of it. She hit it off the end of the bat, I think, in terms of like a first single, just because it didn't land cleanly in terms of what she was hoping to accomplish, I think, narratively.
I think a lot about "Look What You Made Me Do" in terms of like unfinished business, right? So it's unfinished business because Kanye and Kim basically had the last word, even if
with
Taylor
the Snapchat
with
video,
the, yes, and
which had maybe been edited, maybe not, but showed that Kanye had expressed something about the song "Famous" to Taylor
yes,
Swift.
Yes, and public
it came
opinion,
out.
Like public opinion, had shifted against her. for all of my affection for Kanye, like, Kanye's a kind of an easy person to dislike. Kanye's an easy person to, like, root against.
Yes, certainly.
And so as far as antagonists.
Especially right now.
Yeah, as far as antagonists for Taylor goes, like, there's a universe in which Kanye really eats all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And Taylor comes out looking pristine.
Right.
But that is not what happened, largely because of Kim and Kim savvy. So there is this unfinished business with Kanye and Kim. And so Taylor returns, and her return to pop music is actually just a return to solve the problem that was caused by the Kanye and Kim situation.
And I think however long ago that Kanye and Kim situation was, month-wise,
like
felt, and it felt, it couldn't have been further
pre-November 2016.
Month. I mean, yes, and pre many things that came around and after that. And mm-hmm. I think as much as obviously it had been on Taylor's mind, people had moved on,
yeah.
And I just don't think people needed that business to be
finished.
No
one needed to be closed. It wasn't yet. Yeah,
except obviously Taylor.
Well, I think in terms of topics that people felt like Taylor should address, that was not on the list.
Right.
You know, like there's lots of conversation about how she didn't say anything for either candidate during the election. We're not going to argue that any pop star has an obligation to express their political affiliation mm-hmm. or make any sort of endorsement, but it was a silence that was noted, and then she comes back talking about a beef that was sort of over, mm-hmm. and I think that that didn't really help either.
And as you said, as I think you were getting at with the trial, like, maybe she had this moment where people could have been expecting a feminist statement,
yes.
A more explicit feminist mm-hmm. statement. And, you know, obviously the way that music works, especially for extremely famous people, there's a big gap between when you record and, you know, right, what absolutely. Albums yes. you're doing and when things are out. So who knows when she was making music with relation to the trial. But I think looking back on it with the sort of Monday morning quarterback view, you think she really could have capitalized on that in some way if she would have ridden that testimony and win in trial.
Well, incredibly powerful. It would have made for incredibly powerful music. And obviously the counter narrative to that is like Taylor Swift being Taylor Swift, being a successful female singer, songwriter, pop star, multi-platinum.
Runs her businesses,
yes,
et cetera,
like that is inherently, that's feminism in action.
Yes.
So that's obviously a counter narrative, but also there is this other kind of like unexplored blank space.
It is feminism in action, but because, I mean, nice. I didn't give you your blank space prop. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I ran right over that. there's just a different expectation now with the way that people use social media that there are other ways that she could have expressed things even outside of the music. And I think also the fact that she isn't doing any interviews as far as we can tell for this album, you know, leaves an additional blank space because it's an opportunity for you to explain your music and allow listeners to have a deeper understanding of what you're going for, have mm-hmm. a different kind of relationship with it.
Yeah, I think maybe if you're hearing anger and Look What You Made Me Do and people are thinking, you know, she still has all this vitriol towards Kanye, but maybe you have a thoughtful interview where you say, I had a lot of other anger swirling yep. in me at that time, and it wasn't just about this tabloid.
Just using this like as that, a symbol, it's
yes,
easy
I
for me.
Yes,
and that,
yes,
and that
yes,
would
exactly.
put the song
yeah.
maybe in a different right. context, as is, you know, the additional context we got for this song was this video in which she's,
yes.
You know,
right.
killing other versions of Taylor Swift. And as I said, it remains a little blurry to me.
A very
what that has
90s
to do with
video.
Kanye West.
I would say, in addition,
video.
Though, to killing other versions of Taylor Swift, she was making allusions to other pop stars in there, too.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't you document?
I might have tweeted a couple of them. Yes.
Yeah. If you go at Matt Patrol, dating back a few weeks,
and dig back.
Might find some key screen grabs in there. Just saying. But to circle back to the idea of unfinished business, the other unfinished business that I think Look What You Made Me Do really attends to is Taylor's kind of full molting, and not just like the old Taylor's dead, yada yada, but the full molting of like an old, this kind of the version of Taylor where even on the last record, there was like a discourse online. Like I remember I alluded to in a show review something about her like still being an underdog in the pop sense, where mm-hmm. she presents herself as like, I'm a country singer who's become a pop star.
And it was still new.
It was still sort of new, and it was part of the presentation that she wasn't a native pop star.
Yeah, she was
star.
A little bit of an awkward fit as a pop star, as yes. she was an awkward fit as a country singer.
Exactly. And
five,
that was part
10 years earlier.
And I remember people got pissy on the internet about that, because like, oh, Taylor Swift's not an underdog, and da da da. What you see on this song is like, actually, that whole narrative is officially dead.
She's an overdog.
Overdog? And it's dead in terms of how we as journalists and critics can write about her, but it's also dead from how she's presenting herself. And I think if you stitch together kind of all of the singles that we've heard thus far, what you're actually seeing is not necessarily something that's redolent of old Taylor. You're seeing this kind of a hybridized, stitched-together version that's like Taylor as pop star or pop music with a little Taylor seasoning on it.
Right. When you think of first songs from albums, you know, they're supposed to give you some indication maybe of where this artist is going to head sonically. And, you know, you hear this sort of dark, fairy tale-ish, you know, a little bionic, a little industrial, like you said.
It's a Jack Antonoff production, right?
Yeah, it's produced by Jack Antonoff. It's a little different than what we're used to from him. You know, he worked a lot on 1989 as well, or some. He began to craft that sound with her. And, you know, I think if people are thinking, oh, is this what Taylor Swift sounds like now? And then soon after you get Ready For It, the second single, and you're like, okay, I guess this is what Taylor sounds like now.
Can we, before we play Ready For It, can we just spend 30 seconds on the Right Said Fred thing?
Oh, yeah. I actually forgot about it. That also feels like it was 50 years ago.
It does. Yeah. Okay. So
sure.
I think this is not a real thing, and I think it's basically prophylactic to prevent from getting sued.
Should we play a little?
Let's play back to back.
Let's explain what we're talking about.
Okay, so Pedro, let's play back to back the section of Look What You Made Me Do where Taylor is spitting bars.
the chorus.
The chorus.
Actually saying, Look What You Made Me Do.
And then the part of I'm Too Sexy by Right Said Fred.
Where they say they're too sexy.
I mean, it's most of the song. There's most, pretty much pick anyway.
Oh, look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do.
I'm too sexy for my love. Too sexy for my love. Love's going to leave me. My shirt, too sexy for my shirt, so sexy it hurts. And I am too sexy for Milan, too sexy for Milan, New York and Japan.
Okay, so you know you be the judge. Like, sure, they sound alike, but like that also sounds like literally 36 Kesha songs.
But what you're referring to is that they were given a songwriting credit.
They were giving a songwriting. Yes. They're making
as if
money.
It's an interpolation.
Your boys,
I'm too sexy.
Richard Fairbrass, Fred Fairbrass, and Rob Manzoli out here getting that guap.
They're brothers in Right Said Fred.
Yes,
oh, I didn't know that.
Hell yeah. Well, they all, you know, they look alike.
And now they have a year of rent money.
Yeah, they probably got like 3 years. Or I mean, I don't know where they live. To be fair. Right. So, you know, it might only be 3 months. But they're out here cashing checks, impressing their friends with their songwriting credit, which I personally think is a little bit of nonsense and kind of like post-Blurred Lines.
Yeah, Blurred Lines obviously changed a lot of the considerations around songwriting and copyright. And, you know, you see Ed Sheeran, Shape of You, has a TLC writing credit. Maybe it sounds a little like No Scrubs. Some people say, you know, that we've seen various examples of this.
But I think
better to give Right Said Fred a little money than to get sued and go through another trial.
Also,
I almost feel like the better gets sued. But like,
bad press.
Yeah, but is it really? Because I just feel like if you're really going to look at that flow pattern, you could, like, you get some musicologist and you'd be like, here's literally 700 songs.
Well, I feel like we'll get to this later in the podcast. But if, you know, there's a narrative out currently that Taylor's a bit of like a conqueror, you know, and seen as a bit of a legal bully. And I don't think that being involved in another lawsuit would have helped. But let's play the next song.
Are you ready for it?
So litigious. It hurts.
Please don't ever do that again.
Oh, my God.
Okay, now we can play Ready For It.
Are you ready for it? Are you ready for it? Me and you'll never be alone. I island breeze and lights down low. No one has to know. In the middle of the night, in my dreams,
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. I have been trying to understand changes in migration. So I traveled with photographer Federico Rios to the Darien Gap, this hot, mountainous, 70-mile stretch of jungle straddling the border of Colombia and Panama.
We're hiking through a river, just like covered in mud.
Many used to think that this route was impassable, but thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the Darien, almost all in the hopes of making it to the United States. We spent 9 days hiking through the gap and weeks building trust and relationships with migrants, with smugglers, with migration authorities to even be able to do this reporting. We interviewed hundreds of people who have made this journey to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths to find a new life. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
So here's another pneumatic drill of a record, Ready For It, which I happen to like quite a lot.
I mean, to me, this is the least of the four songs that are out so far.
I actually like this one the best. This is the Silence of the Lambs song where she is wearing Kanye West skin.
And dancing in front of the mirror.
Oh my God.
But I mean, like, as soon as we heard it, it has a Yeezus quality.
It has a Yeezus quality to it.
Ready For It is the so to speak, rap song and the pretty pop song.
In the middle of the night, it all changes.
Yeah.
In your dreams?
Old Taylor comes back.
Yeah.
That was quick.
from the dead. I think there's a lot of, you know, just anecdotally, I think it really, people's mileage with these four songs really varies. And I think, you know, there are people who will take Look What You Made Me Do over Ready For It in terms of the sort of darker of the two.
Yeah.
Or of the four. Too dark and too light, in my mind, at least. And, you know, I think Ready For It, as you said, JP, it is more than one song sort of crammed together. It's maybe more than two songs, but I think it builds to a place that Look What You Made Me Do did not.
So I was actually thinking while I was listening to this, how dated all of this like trap percussion is going to sound in about 6 months. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, right, that song was late 2017. I'm done with that sound. So, I mean,
You think Taylor should have done a little Pump collaboration instead?
More distortion.
Ready for it.
But I didn't need the bass drop either.
You didn't need the bass drop at all.
I did not need the bass drop. Taylor's already done a bass drop. She didn't have to come back to that.
I feel like the bass drops have become... Certainly, I think for Taylor, not necessarily so much for the rest of Bob, but for Taylor, a kind of shorthand for kind of like energetic pop record.
Right.
And I think that dates back to I Knew What You Were Trouble, where it was like literal OMG, this is in the middle of like a huge pop song.
Yeah, I think
exactly.
It was perfect.
Where it had not previously been.
Yeah. That was the time to do it.
Yeah, and it's not that she did a bass drop. She did the bass drop. Yeah. I mean, and that was when the old Taylor died, when you've heard I Knew You Were Trouble for the first time. You know what I mean? It was a new conversation from that day forward.
Once upon a time, a few mistakes ago, I was in your sights. You got me alone. Places I've never been. Now I'm lying.
Ready For It is the official second single.
Yeah.
And it came out, you know, only maybe like a week or and a little change after Look What You Made Me Do. I wonder what you guys think about the sort of 1-2 punch to set up this album and if you think it's been effective.
I think what it has been effective at doing is resetting expectations, or at least demolishing another set of expectations. Because what these two songs have, at least for me as a critic, have forced me to do is kind of engage in this like existential conversation with myself about what is a Taylor Swift song, or what are the kind of constituent elements that have to be present in order to make a song a Taylor Swift song.
Not a guitar, apparently.
Yes. So what I'm most struck by about these two records is if you took Taylor Swift's voice off them and gave me instrumentals and said, name the pop singer or the R&B singer or whatever most likely to be performing on this record.
Oh, that's a good
yeah.
test.
Yeah.
What would you have said?
I think the first one would have been Kesha.
Mm-hmm.
But not new Kesha.
No.
Classic Kesha. Kesha.
Yeah, like OG Kesha. Kesha when it counted.
Yeah.
Second one, let's see.
You wouldn't say Fergie for the first one?
Love Fergie.
Just harkening back to two podcasts ago.
Shouts to, first of all, shouts to Go Cop That Fergie.
Yeah. You're still the only person who's listened to
Go
it.
Cop That Fergie.
I know a couple of people came over to me to tell me they agreed with you.
Also, yeah, shouts to the people who've been emailing podcastnytimes.com to say that of those three records, Fergie's the best. Shouts to all those. Seriously.
You mean all your burner email accounts, John?
What do you guys think I do all that? Is I just email myself from other accounts to reinforce my way of thinking. Anyway, Go Cop That Fergie. Ready for Rihanna?
Yeah.
A couple Rihannas ago. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Like
Rated R Rihanna.
I feel like Selena Gomez could have gotten away with that.
Ooh.
Because she's been very interesting lately.
Yeah. No, interesting. Yeah, yeah. Last album, Selena Gomez.
Yeah.
But it's all these people converging on the same sound,
Halsey,
though.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but not Taylor. I mean, like, if would you ever think Taylor Swift would be converging on the same sound as 2014 Rihanna, Selena Gomez, and Halsey?
Like, I think not.
So the reset, as a reset, it worked.
As strategy, it worked. As aesthetics, I happen to like it, but I think there are plenty of people who are left confused by it.
Without hearing the two lighter songs, so at that point we didn't know that there were two more songs, I wouldn't call it a reset. I would call it like a confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Because it made me think, so the first one lyrically and the second one sonically, I was like, she's absolutely obsessed with Kanye. How can I listen to an entire album with this? Mm. I have to say, the next two songs, you know, I changed my mind.
Sure.
But I don't know if it's a reset.
But again, what is a Taylor Swift song? And this is what I've been spending a lot of time thinking about, is I think up until 2014, I knew the answer to that question. Even when she went off grid a little bit, I still knew the answer to that question. But I think in the moment after those first two songs came out, but before the next two, I was like, I actually don't think I can authoritatively say that I know the answer to this question anymore.
Right.
That's been strange.
And I think the unsettling nature of them and the sort of confusion that they have sowed is apparent a bit in the marketplace. Like, mm-hmm. neither of these two songs are smashes. Look What You Made Me Do was Taylor's return. You know, it did huge numbers at first.
It was a news event.
Out of curiosity. Ready For It, you know, didn't really land as hard. It's still, you know, both of them, I think, were big in their first couple weeks. Mm-hmm. But they haven't really stuck around.
And isn't, if I'm not mistaken, Ready For It debuted high, dropped, and is now climbing again?
Because of the video. Well, the video was released, so it popped back up on the chart. Look What You Made Me Do, you know, hit number one initially, was bumped off by Cardi B, and then has sort of, you know, sunk since then. I think,
well,
you know,
Ready For It is, and I'm just looking, Ready For It is now number 19.
Right.
But it had peaked at number 4, but last week it was number 46.
And then it jumped back.
So it's jumping back, and I actually, just based on casual sort of Z100 listening, I feel like it's getting its push now. It wasn't getting its push 5 weeks ago.
But if you think of something like Shake It Off, which was another semi-jarring Taylor Swift single, mm-hmm. you know, when she premiered that on Ellen, I remember very distinctly being like, I don't know what Taylor Swift is doing. But Shake It, and but as baffling as Shake It Off was at first, people came around to it, and it became a Taylor Swift classic, and it was everywhere.
I prefer both of these two new songs to Shake It Off.
Sure, but culturally, I think Shake It Off had a staying power that I'm not sure these songs
in line
will
with the
have.
Taylor that we were familiar with. It might have been, you know, a self-empowerment song, but it wasn't negative. What's happening over here?
Sorry, I'm just adjusting. I'm just getting comfortable looking at the Billboard Hot 100.
Yeah.
Because I have to spend a lot of time looking at it because I have to spend a lot of time looking at it to get to Taylor Swift. Because a lot of things are on the list in front of Taylor Swift.
Like Lil Pump.
Like Lil Pump. Like Camila Cabello. Like your man Logic out here with Khalid and Alessia Cara. Your man J Balvin, heavy with the Beyonce assist. Rake It Up and Motorsport. And I get the bag and bank account back to back to back to back. And of course, your man Puthor Vandross himself, Charlie
Puth. Don't do this to us right now, please.
Charlie Puth with Attention, number 18. Sorry, just an early. And I'm just trying to give you an early preview of my top 10 of the year.
but the point you're making, however roundabout, it stands, which is that these two Taylor songs are not dominating the pop
Ready
world.
Ready For It is at number 19. Look What You Made Me Do is now at number 34. Right. Although it was at number one.
Right. Debuted at number one, but it didn't last.
What about the sunnier of the songs?
Should we transition,
Let's transition to happier times?
To the third Taylor song.
Well, and I think it's not a coincidence, probably, that, you know, these two songs came. They did this hard reset. They scrambled people's brains a little bit. They didn't stick around, and then we got a different side of Taylor that maybe is closer to what we're used to.
We got a gorgeous side of Taylor. Gorgeous.
You should take it as a compliment that I got drunk and made fun of the way you talk. You should think about the consequence of your magnetic field being a little too strong. And I got a boyfriend, he's older than us. He's in the club doing I don't know what. You're so cool, it makes me hate you so much.
I hate you so much.
So Gorgeous is at number 69. Last week it was at number 3. It's only been 2 weeks. So I think the Billboard charts have become so micro-reactive.
Fickle, very fickle.
Yeah, they become really micro-reactive. And so what you're seeing are these kind of moments where songs have like very big breakthroughs and there's a tremendous spike because of pent-up interest. And then there's a fade to kind of a natural arc.
And then comes back up or it goes away.
It crawls back up. So in a weird way, all of these songs, assuming they get to the top 10, are going to do what Bodak Yellow did. They're just going to do it in a more compressed period of time, and they're going to spike first.
But don't forget, though, that all the charts take streaming data into consideration. And as our colleague Ben Cesario reported this week, there are signs that Taylor might not be streaming her album, which will certainly have an impact on her appearance.
And
songs.
These four songs
when
are
you sell, like, a million records, like, you know.
Yeah, but in terms of individual tracks, though.
Oh, sure.
I think streaming, you know.
But she is streaming these four songs.
Yes.
Yeah. I actually wonder, do we know if those will count, those four songs?
I believe they
if
will.
They're not technically
I believe if they're out released as singles and they continue to stream and the rest of the album is not streaming, the streams will still count toward the album sales.
They will. Okay.
Yeah.
If anyone from Billboard is listening or Nielsen is listening and wants to correct us. Like,
decision of the judges is final.
Yes, I'm just going to say our DMs are open. Yeah. So just let us know.
Your DMs might be open.
Gorgeous is the third song by Taylor Swift, which we just heard. And this is very much not the Taylor Swift of the first two songs. This
but
is
the
Taylor
Swift. It's back to a familiar mode, though.
Yeah, it's like the Taylor Swift of October 2017 is like not the Taylor Swift of September 2017.
True.
Those were the days.
Gorgeous does seem almost like kind of a course correction. Again, not knowing the full picture, but like does seem, or at least a sort of like a wink to those of us who have been paying attention for a long time, who are like maybe a little bit shaken up by the first two records, and then say, oh, okay, no, they're still, I do this.
Is Taylor Swift still capable of love? gorgeous.
Apparently,
yes.
So this, well, she's capable of infatuation.
Right.
Yes. Good point.
Who among us?
But in this song, what you're getting is lyrically, she's saying, I've had some bad times recently, but you, man who's maybe British and blonde and Google his name if you feel like it. You're bringing me out of it and you don't care about the baggage, basically.
Yeah, this is like a transition. This is like a out of, and again, maybe out of the darkness into the light. Like maybe that's what's happening here.
But this is also old awkward Taylor.
Mm.
He's gorgeous. Though she never says he.
No.
I kind of like the indefinite pronoun.
Yeah.
But this person is gorgeous and she's, you know, daunted by it because, wait a minute, wasn't she just bionic superstar Taylor in the last two singles?
Right.
I mean, this is kind of backing off to the Taylor who's acting in Shake It Off, the awkward girl.
Mm-hmm. And again, you know, Taylor, I don't want to say she has only two modes because I think she's like a complex performer, but two dominant modes certainly are like Taylor the antagonist and Taylor in search of a romantic partner or infatuated, as you said, JP, with romantic partner. And so you're kind of at two of the first kind or one and a half of the first kind. And now you're shifting into this part of the record.
Right.
It's kind of like back off versus come on over.
Yeah. And this one, and I also think like this one gets us back to a little more storytelling Taylor, her sort of, you know, she's always, her romanticism has always been a part of her that I think draws a lot of people to her, especially young fans and maybe among her more cynical critics, they're like, you know, how is she still so wide-eyed? It reminds me of Enchanted from Speak Now, is it?
The rare Taylor song I genuinely hate.
Which is about having a sort of one-night crush on someone. Mm-hmm. I was enchanted to meet you. Mm-hmm. And Gorgeous, I feel like, has a similar vibe.
At your home, is there a speaker in like an upper corner living room that just plays Enchanted on repeat?
It depends on my mood.
Okay. So
I'm just curious. Okay. Someday I'm going to come over and find out. But yes, I agree. Gorgeous did remind me of Enchanted, although I like Gorgeous more than Enchanted. I remember thinking at that point of Taylor's career that it was like a disingenuous record to make because like Taylor is like so obviously a more complicated.
Right. And it trades a lot on naivete, which I think we've learned Taylor is a lot of things, but she's not really naive in most senses.
No, but I think she plays it well.
Yes.
But I don't think she actually is.
Well, let us point out that she's at Sunset and Vine drinking whiskey this song.
Oh, yeah.
She's not the ingenue.
Yeah. So as Young M.A. might say, Taylor's getting a little slizz.
Yeah. or maybe she's abstaining and just the partner's drinking whiskey on ice.
So it's like my life.
Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't there. I've never, I don't hang out at Sunset.
You wasn't there.
It's not my neighborhood.
But also, musically, this is like a completely different sound than the first two songs.
Thank you for pulling us back.
Yeah, I'm starting to get a little worried. You know, it's kind of, it's still synthy, but it's a little more of like a bright, brittle, bubbly in a way sound than the first two, which are just so like grimy.
Well, and what's funny is the first two songs, the first one is Jack Antonoff, the second one is Max Martin. They sound more like Max Martin than they sound like Jack Antonoff. This song sounds more like Jack Antonoff, but is produced by Max Martin.
I actually got it wrong because I was going to guess it was Jack.
Right. Yeah. So this sort of gets us back towards 1989 and maybe Sweeter Than Fiction is that the other Taylor Jack song from a soundtrack.
I think so, yeah.
You know, that it has like that vibe to it, but it's a Max Martin production.
And Joe, who produced the last song we're about to listen to?
Well, so that one actually is a Jack Antonoff song. So you know, they're sort of sharing sounds here.
Yes.
In service of Taylor.
We're talking about Call It What You Want.
Yes.
Why don't we just quickly listen to that?
Damn. Karen just steering it.
My castle crumbled overnight. I brought a knife to a gunfight. They took the crown, but it's alright. All the liars are calling me one. Nobody's heard from me for months. I'm doing better than I ever was. Cause my baby's fit like a daydream, walking with his head down. I'm the one he's walking to. So call it what you want. What you want to. My babies fly like a jet stream, high above the
So this is a Jack and Taylor song that actually sounds like a Jack and Taylor song. I think, Joe, your point about them sharing like the sonic pool of Taylor, there are certain ideas that have become particular to it. And I do think, at least on the songs that we've heard so far, they become a little bit interchangeable between Jack and Max. But I think that gets back to my question at the beginning, yeah, which is like, what is a Taylor Swift song? And like, sometimes the thing that's Taylor Swift song can be brought from Jack to Max or Max to Jack, or just exists in Taylor's voice memos, which we'd love to hear, by the way. Just throw that out there.
I mean, the voice memos from 1989 are a classic.
So we want more. So this is the fourth Taylor single, and again, is closer, I think, in spirit to the third Taylor single. What do you guys vibe on this?
Well, but it's also talking back to her press at the beginning. It's also talking back to her media image. You know, I've been out of sight, but you know, meanwhile I'm doing fine. But yeah, mm-hmm, it's sort of a
yeah.
Little,
this one gets at the reputation theme a little bit.
Yeah.
And while we're sort of tracing back the new Taylors to the old Taylors, like, I feel like she really realized she could do that effectively with Blank Space, which was the one where she sort of took her reputation and grabbed it by the horns and was sort of like, okay, you guys think that I'm this serial dater, like, I'm going to turn it around on you.
Right, she Eminem'd.
Right, and effectively. I mean, that was a number one record. That was a big hit. I feel like that was, you know, one of the defining songs of Taylor as pop star.
A new Taylor.
Yeah.
Totally.
And you with the umlaut.
Right.
New Taylor.
I was picturing it.
So part of Taylor's engagement with the idea of reputation, I think, has a lot to do with how she's perceived on the internet and how she's discussed on the internet. And we should probably talk briefly about how she has been engaging the internet up until this point and how she's going to on the rollout. We talked about streaming. We don't know if she's going to be streaming. I personally find it unlikely that this will not end up on the Spotify free tier at some point in the near future. I think maybe a window of a week.
Yeah, some of the reporting has said a week. Some of it has said two.
Yeah.
We'll see.
But, like, Taylor's fans want to stream. Like, you know, the obvious counterpart is Adele, but Adele's fans don't own computers. So I think Taylor's fans, they want to stream it. They're going to want to see it on Spotify. I think it'll be there soon. That'd be my guess.
Well, Joe just wrote a lovely story in the New York Times.
I was getting to it.
I'm just helping.
Oh, my God.
About Taylor's relationship to the blogging platform Tumblr.
Tumblr, give me back my URL.
Bodying. Rest in peace.
That's also, you don't even know about my secret Tumblrs. That's just the public Tumblr. I got like three secret Tumblrs, all gone.
I have a lot of secret Tumblrs too, John.
Yeah.
I think what we saw when Taylor was ramping up the reputation era, the first time there was an inkling that she was about to return was when she wiped all of her social media. And I think that was a statement in and of itself.
A sad day for me?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, no longer following some important people that she was following. You know, so that included Instagram, Twitter.
Yes.
She wiped her Tumblr archives. What she did not do was stop following all of the Taylor Swift fans that she had been following on Tumblr. Tumblr, you know, for those of you who weren't big on the internet in 2010-ish, a little before, I looked back, my Tumblr turned 9 this summer. So that's, this is a big platform for a time. And
well, what is it about Tumblr that you think makes it appeal to Taylor so much?
Well,
and also why is that fan community still gathering on Tumblr?
Right. Because she's there. Taylor spends a lot of time on Tumblr.
Do you think she has the Tumblr app on her phone?
I think she does.
Oh my God.
I do too. She started with 1989. You know, they launched taylorswift.tumblr.com. It's a normal promotional vehicle, same as any other pop star's blog or Instagram or Twitter. Then at a certain point, she takes it over and she writes, you know, it's Taylor. I'm about to learn how to use this thing. And she really took to it. She, you know, Swifties, her equivalent of the Beehive or Lady Gaga's Little Monsters.
Or BTS Army.
They all began congregating on Tumblr where their star was. And she, you know, would like posts. She, you know,
there's a pretty high level of engagement with her. Like, you can interact with her.
And Jimmy, and just for context, like, Taylor is someone who's kind of like Small scale interaction with fans has always been integral. I remember, like, when I followed her around her second album, watching her interact with young people, and it was, like, very focused, yes. very specific person-to-person interaction. Yes,
and she was a pro at meet and greets early.
Beyond, like,
she would, you know, she would find fans in the arena that had, you know, tweeted at her mm-hmm. or tumbled at her and give them better seats or pull them backstage.
She also gives gifts, like, you know,
sends
like
flowers.
Graduates college yeah. and they get a
Can
gift.
Can I point out something that she's not doing on Tumblr?
She didn't give you a gift.
No, what? No. Okay. But I wouldn't be able to accept it.
That's true.
Ethical guidelines.
New York Times ethics rules.
New York Times, guys. She's not addressing issues that the fans don't want to talk about. So she's not addressing the kind of issues that, like, an interviewer might ask.
Are you calling Tumblr a safe space?
I'm calling it a safe space. Right. And there's nothing wrong with having a safe space mm-hmm. where fans can communicate with their star. But since this is her main arm of communication, and there isn't another one. Like, she's not really a big tweeter.
Yeah.
And
so,
she's an Instagrammer, but that's really just a photo platform.
Right. And
you
she
know what I'm getting at.
So
here.
When she cleared her accounts, you know, she started using Twitter and Instagram again, but to as a megaphone to basically say, you know, have a song coming out, mm-hmm. here's a teaser video, whatever. Quietly on Tumblr, she kept up her engagement. You know, people write fan fiction about her, or they write an interpretation of a song, or they draw some of her lyrics, and she reblogs it and she puts it on her blog and she says, you know, Annie, this is beautiful to her loyal fans. And I think in this moment where she's maybe more embattled in public than she ever was previously, whether it's Kanye or Katy Perry or this trial, or did she vote for Trump, or, you know, the alt-right co-opting her music,
yes.
she's pretty much... She's sort of, as I wrote in the piece, she's like cocooning herself in this safe space and doubling down sort of on her base.
And all of those topics that you just mentioned are topics that we have not heard Taylor speaking about.
Right.
Yep.
You know, whether it's coming directly from her or through a media outlet, these are all sort of like what feel to me, talking about unfinished business, this is the unfinished business of Taylor in 2017. The unfinished business up until the release of these singles was her full kind of like revamping into a kind of like high-test pop star. Now the unfinished business is, what about the rest of Taylor?
Well, it remains to be seen whether we'll get more of that on the album, but I think, you know, spending my week in Taylor Tumblr was jarring to then see the news story that surfaced earlier this week, which is that a small-time blogger had said that her songs were of a piece with the alt-right and white mm-hmm. supremacy, and that she needs to denounce these things. She's become a sort of symbol on the right because of her Aryan good looks.
And she hasn't.
And she hasn't.
She has not actually spoken.
And
out.
Yeah. Personally, she hasn't said anything. Now, you know, she's had lawyers and publicists mm-hmm. sort of say, proxy people say, this isn't me, this, you know, take this down. And in this particular instance, you know, this blogger received a letter from her lawyer sort of saying, you know, cease and desist, like, get rid of this. The ACLU is defending the writer and saying this is free speech. Basically, this is critical thought. But just this idea of Taylor sort of speaking to her antagonists with lawyers and then speaking to her fans with sort of gentle love. Mm-hmm. It's pretty discordant.
And would you say that it's like the two different parts of the second song?
I mean,
there really seems like there's like a dark Taylor and a light Taylor all over this record and in her persona. But
we're about 36 hours away from finding out.
So we'll be back.
So we will be back. We're going to have part two of the Taylor podcast Monday or Tuesday, TBD, but it's coming soon. Let's close out with, I think, a Taylor we can all agree on, top to bottom. 2006, first Taylor Swift single, Tim McGraw.
He said the way my blue eyes shined put those Georgia stars to shame that night. He said that's a lie.
Thank you for listening to the New York Times podcast. Thank you to my guests, John Perellis, Joe Coscarelli, and Karen Gans. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. You should email us a lot of things about Taylor Swift because I read all the emails and I love all of them at podcast@nytimes.com. And you can subscribe to the podcast anywhere you get your audio, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher. Apparently, we're on the iHeartRadio app. There was a bunch of stuff on iHeartRadio this week, so thanks to them. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We are back next week.
The one we dance to all night long. The moon like a spotlight on the lake. When you think happiness, I hope you think that little black dress. Think of my head on your chest and my old faded blue jeans. When you think to my girl, I hope you think.
at me. September saw.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.